The next case is 04-928 in regardianship of Aiden Stein. Markovich.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Edward Markovich, and I represent parents Erica Heimlich and Matthew Stein. I would note for the Court also that four generations of the Stein family are represented here, in addition to Eric and Matthew. Aiden's grandmother, Dawn Mansfield, is present, and also his great-grandmother, Lenore Stein. This is a case, Your Honors, of parents patriae versus parents' rights. In the view of the parents, the probate court of Summit County exceeded its grant of authority from the Ohio General Assembly in its appointment of a limited guardian by its determination that Aiden's being is contrary to his best interest. This honorable court only 2 years ago stated in Hester versus Duvitty that the status of being alive simply does not constitute injury. I believe that all the parties in the case at bar, Your Honors, have Aiden's best interest at heart. There is simply a profound difference of opinion about a fundamentally fair procedure being available to my clients who are his natural guardians. If Aiden were an adult, Your Honors, there would be checks and balances sufficient to protect the substantive due process rights which are at issue in this case. For instance, 2133.08EA3 would require that the court weigh the statutory guideline of a permanently unconscious condition, a terminal condition, and that the permanently unconscious condition persist for 12 months prior to a guardian withdrawing life-sustaining medical treatment. That simply has not been provided in this case. I would draw the Court's attention to the fact that in the Summit County Probate Court for more than a decade, now that requirement has been disregarded. In fact, in the in guardianship of Carla Myers' case, the Court specifically struck down 2133.08A2 as not binding it or its guardians. And I find that, Your Honors, to be somewhat troubling based on the rush to judgment which occurred in this case. In the case of, in regardianship of Crum, in 1991, the patient was in a persistent unconscious condition for 5.5 years. In 1997, in the Myers case, it was for 3 months. In my client's case, it was for 3 weeks. 2 years prior, in the case of Taylor Darling, the Summit County Probate Court reached an identical result.
Mr. Markovich, I want to make sure you use your time well here. I voted to allow this case because I thought there were a couple of legal issues for us to decide, and not whether the trial judge had abused his discretion in deciding to follow the medical advice of certain experts.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But whether the one was residency, it seems to me that's not much argument about that, it seems to me now. The other was the jurisdiction of the probate court to make the decision that the probate court made here. In your proposition of law, your argument seems to me a constitutional issue.
No fundamentally fair proceeding, Your Honor. That's correct.
It wasn't.
Then,
really
in fact, the application, in construing the statutes.
If I could finish, though, just so you know what I'm thinking, what I'm looking
sir.
For.
Right.
In the proposition of law, you raise the constitutional issues, but do we really need that? Wasn't I mean it was raised very incidentally below, but we don't really need to get to the constitutional issue, do we? Don't isn't this a question of whether the probate court has a jurisdiction or whether the juvenile court has the jurisdiction to remove the permanent custody of?
I would agree, Your Honor. The Nebraska Supreme Court, in fact, eschewed the federal constitutional principles for the same reason. finding that the termination, the functional equivalent of the termination of parental rights without a legal determination, a proper legal determination, even in the presence of clear and convincing evidence of shaken baby syndrome in that case, which was accepted by the Nebraska Supreme Court, was legally improper. I believe that Ohio's statutory scheme is fatally flawed,
but you, Your Honor. You did agree that the child was either neglected or abused and that the probate court should proceed to provide a guardian that would make medical decisions. I know you disagree with whether
that's
withdrawing
correct.
Life support was one of the issues, but
that's correct.
But how do we, in terms of the law, how do we use this case to write law when on the facts, it seems to me you agreed with the procedure, most of it, in probate court.
That's correct. In fact, the parents patriae power exercised by the probate court, Your Honor, is available for the case of medical guardianship for the maintenance, custody, and care of the minor. That's what the statute specifically provides. In this case, for more than a decade, the jurisprudence of this particular court has been that the living will statute does not apply. And in fact, Judge Spicer said that specifically Ohio's Modified Uniform Rights of the Terminally Act was devised as a carrot approach to legislation as opposed to mandatory and binding law. While Revised Code Chapter 2133 may provide some guidance, this court is not bound, nor is its guardian bound, to follow the provisions of the statute. Now, my clients, Your Honor, because they've not been determined to be guilty of anything, have been under a presumption of guilt, which I believe is unrebuttable and unconstitutional on the basis of this application of the statute. As there is no clear statutory guideline under Ohio law, Your Honor, that exposes the fundamental and substantive constitutional rights at issue in the case.
Counsel, let me try to take my stab at backing you up because you're way down the road from where I am in terms of my concerns about this case. What is the legal status of this child at this point?
Your Honor, this child is in the temporary custody of the Richland County Children's Services Board.
And how did that happen?
By an admission to Akron Children's Hospital Medical Center on March 16th, Your Honor.
No. How did the Richland County Children's Services Board come to have?
In the ordinary course of Juvenile Rule 6 on an allegation of child abuse, Your Honor.
Okay. In what court?
In the Richland County Juvenile Court, where it was properly lodged.
All right. So I have a problem understanding how the Summit County Court took jurisdiction of this child to begin with and why you didn't object to that to begin with.
And secondly,
my understanding of this case is the mother is unquestionably not involved in what is alleged may or may not have caused
the child
to be.
That is not correct, Your Honor. That is not correct.
The mother is involved.
The mother is presumed to be guilty under this unrebuttable presumption of a conflict of interest, Your Honor, which arises from an ethical guideline, not from a legal.
I'm trying to get the facts out on the table. We can talk about the law.
Okay.
Factually,
I would agree, Your Honor.
All right.
She is not under a cloud of suspicion, only legally in the opinion of the Summit County Probate Court.
All right. So, factually, the mother's not even rumored to be involved in any abuse to the child. Hey, you agree?
Your Honor, I'm at somewhat of a disadvantage in that has been stated as a proposition of law by my learned opponent. So I really can't say, Your Honor, but I'm certainly willing to respond to the question.
Okay. Secondly, in Richland County, the juvenile court took jurisdiction of this child.
That's correct.
But we end up in Summit County, and you don't contest that.
Your Honor, I moved for a dismissal and transfer of venue to Richland County at the opening of the proceeding. That was denied.
But you seem to have given up on that
No, Your Honor. My client's child needed a gastrostomy and a tracheostomy merely to survive. The hospital said it would not provide it because the child was not worth providing that care under a quality of life determination. My clients, under a true parents patriae jurisprudence, required the assistance of the Summit County Probate Court. And that is, in fact, I would not put them in a procedural box where their child would die during the pendency of the proceeding, Your Honor, simply to satisfy a procedural issue, which in effect is a very minor issue in this case. This particular court has maintained jurisdiction of children outside of the Summit County for more than 5 years, and this particular area of the law requires, it cries out for some guidance from this honorable court.
I guess I need a clarification. I thought the child maybe was moved to Summit County because the medical facilities there were more adequate to provide for a child who had this disability.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Counsel, I thought in reading the other side's briefs that the mother was under suspicion because of the prior injury that showed up, and they could not rule her out as having caused the prior injury. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. In effect, she was asked to turn on Matthew in hopes of preserving Aiden from this legal snare. She would not comply with that questionable request.
So it is not true that she has no suspicion on her at all.
By the presumption of the conflict of interest in diagnosis, that's
just
correct.
Just the fact that there was a prior injury to the second catastrophic injury, there's a prior evidence of a prior old injury, and they don't have any explanation of who caused that injury because both parents could have been home at that time. The second injury, he was clearly the only one.
But that is incorrect, Your Honor. That is incorrect. That was provided by medical testimony from my client's expert witness, that Aiden suffered a birth injury and an accumulation of subdural fluid.
Well, that's a disputed
issue. I would draw attention to that is the characterization
counsel,
of that evidence.
You may have a disputed issue, but it is not accurate to say that there is no allegation.
And that's what I was attempting to address in my response to Justice Pfeiffer, Your Honor. Thank you. Now, the standards, the actual checks and balances which would be required in the termination of parental rights have not been applied in this case, and there has been a failure of a fundamentally fair proceeding, which is the baseline for a functional equivalent of the termination of parental rights, which all the parties agree is at issue in the case. There is simply a question about whether there is a waiver in Mr. Kistler's argument. There's simply been a waiver of the entire issue. And in Mr. Dickinson's argument, it's harmless error because it must be, if there's a termination of parental rights, it simply must be self-inflicted by the very nature of the thing. Now, Your Honors, this presumption of a conflict of interest in the diagnosis, it speaks
counsel,
of a...
Moving away from the evidentiary conflicts here and what your expert says and the rationale for the termination, et cetera, I don't think that we're here to decide that. So my concern is that your clients early on gave their approval for the transportation of the child for medical treatment to Children's Hospital in Akron. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that at that point, though, actually, the temporary custody with Richland County Children's Services as a result of the abuse that this child had suffered triggered their involvement, correct?
That's incorrect. There has been no legal determination of abuse by my clients.
All right. Their extension of protection to the child by the alleged
that
abuse.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So we have Children's Services Board from Richland County comes up to Summit County to have medical treatment administered at a superior hospital to what was available in Richland County.
Precisely.
And your clients agree to all this?
Yes.
And they further agree to the guardian being appointed for this child by the probate court?
For the purpose of
medical treatment.
The medical treatment which the child required for his survival. Right?
Okay, so the only issue here is the
termination of life-sustaining medical treatment.
The nature of the authority agreed to by your clients and waived.
And it was stipulated that was not for the life-sustaining withdrawal of life-sustaining medical treatment, Your Honor. That was precisely the issue in the case. The probate court, Your Honors, I was in the somewhat distressing position of having to wave the red flag in front of the bull. I needed to be somewhat subtle in addressing the court, in asking this trial court judge to reverse himself, to reverse two prior very troubling, very difficult decisions because of the absence of any legal determination that would provide the basis for a functional equivalent of termination of parental rights. So I elected to kneel before Toro, Your Honors, as opposed to in the hopes of disarming the beast, as opposed to taunting the court with a recital that there is no statutory authority for what the Summit County Probate Court has done. Parents' patriarchal power has never in American jurisprudence been construed to reach this far. I would reserve my time.
Thank you, Mr. Markovich.
Thank you.
Mr. Dickinson. Mr. Dickinson, I think you and Mr. Kitzler have a discrete separation of time, so the red light will come on at the end of 10 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Claire Dickinson. I'm here on behalf of Ellen Kofori, Aiden Stein's guardian. To get to your question at the beginning, Mr. Chief Justice, the jurisdiction of the probate court in this matter is based upon 21.11.06 of the Ohio Revised Code that gives the court power to appoint guardians to make decisions for minors, including medical decisions, when the parents are unsuitable. And the decisions then are to be made in the best interest of the minor. That's exactly what happened here. In fact, as was referenced during Mr. Markovich's argument, the parents stipulated to the appointment of a guardian for medical purposes and to Ms. Kofori being that guardian. The only issue remaining was whether her authority would extend to the medical decision of withdrawing life support if that were determined to be in Aiden's best interest.
There's Counsel. No statutory authority for that, though, is there, Mr. Dickinson?
The statute does not specifically say that medical decisions include withdrawal of life support.
But they do for adults. The statute says so for adults, but not for minors.
There is a specific statutory scheme set up for adults. There is not a specific statutory scheme dealing just with withdrawal of life support for minors.
But they don't exclude it.
It does not exclude it, which is my point, Your Honor. The statute allows for the appointment of a guardian to make medical decisions. And I believe it is...
And the legislature had an opportunity to exclude that area, but they chose not to.
That is correct, Your Honor. And what's more, the statutory scheme that deals with adults makes it clear that in that scheme, withdrawal of life support, even to the extent of withdrawing nutrition and hydration, is a medical procedure. And that is the basis of the probate court's jurisdiction.
Let's put the waiver issue aside. And Mr. Markovich, rather late in his brief, seems to be arguing that that the juvenile court is the place to determine whether permanent custody will be given to the agency. Let me hear your argument on that.
Sure. I have inferred that argument as well. The premise of that argument is that the authorization of a guardian to withdraw life support is, in effect, the termination of parental rights. That's a false premise, however. The termination of life support is a medical decision. If all life support is withdrawn, the baby will die. However, the cause of death is not the withdrawal of the life support. The cause of death is the injury that brought brought the baby to the condition he is in today.
A healthy person could have life support withdrawn from them and there'd be no impact.
But absolutely.
Here, because this baby is severely damaged, withdrawing life support would kill them.
Yes.
The baby would die from its injury.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. That argument is based upon a false premise. And what's more, to the extent that his argument is that in order to make the decision to terminate parental rights, the fact that the parents have to be proven to be unsuitable, at some points it looks as though he argues that has to be determined by clear and convincing evidence.
Counsel, the job of the probate court is not to terminate parental rights,
that is
except
correct.
In cases of adoption, which they have the authority to do that under. In this case, under 211106, the showing is unsuitability, conflict of interest, that there is a reason to appoint a guardian to have the custody and provide for the maintenance of the ward, and if the ward is a minor, such guardianship will also provide for the education, et cetera, et cetera. So this is someone to stand in the place of the parents, but the law does not require a termination of those parental rights in order for the guardianship to be established.
That's my position, Your Honor. The purpose of my argument is to say that if you don't agree with me, if you feel that the probate court did in fact terminate parental rights, then what due process requires different things in different circumstances, and I believe that Mr. Markovich is arguing that in this circumstance it would have required the probate court to find by clear and convincing evidence that they were unsuitable.
But we don't even have to get there.
Well, you're right. The court does not have to get there.
Well, we get there, I don't want to argue with it, but we get there if we adopt his argument that when the baby dies, they've lost custody of their child because the probate court has ordered something to happen that then puts in motion a chain of events that causes the death.
And if you do get there based upon that, what you will discover is that the probate court determined by clear and convincing evidence that these parents were unsuitable. Matthew and Erica both have a conflict of interest. And the conflict of interest is not necessarily that either of them injured the baby. The conflict of interest is that they're accused of having injured the baby. As a matter of fact, I believe the record will support by clear and convincing evidence that Matthew was the individual who inflicted the most recent injury because he was home alone with the baby at the time. And as was discussed, Erica, the mother, cannot be ruled out from earlier infliction. Injury.
Which then is the predicate determination to make? Do we do the unsuitability or do we do the medical treatment of the child? Which is, in your view, the proper sequence to proceed?
The proper sequence is the determination that the parents are unsuitable.
Is that going on at the moment or has that been done or is there a proceeding pending?
The probate court determined that they were unsuitable by clear and convincing evidence.
And there's no need for any further follow-up either in the juvenile court for termination of rights, in your judgment?
No, Your Honor, because the appointment of a guardian for medical purposes is not a termination of parental rights. Once it's determined that the parents are unsuitable, then the probate court, in its role as parents patre, and supervising the guardian, I believe has a duty to determine that, yes, in fact, a determination that withdrawal of life support.
But doesn't, in the ordinary situation, doesn't juvenile court have the sole jurisdiction to terminate parental rights? except in custody cases.
Sure. Yes, Your Honor, that is true.
And so nothing is going on in Richland County
right.
concerning these parents?
At this point, I do not believe anything is going on. There would be a further proceeding at some point to terminate the...
And yet you just said in response to the prior question that the termination of parental rights must occur first.
No, Your Honor. I said the determination that the parents are unsuitable persons to make medical decisions must be made first before a determination that they're, that it is in the best interest of the baby for life support to be withdrawn.
Appellant's argument seems to be that the decision, if the guardian can terminate the support, life support, it's a de facto termination of parental rights, and you have to go to the juvenile court, terminate those rights first, and then a guardian can make that decision. Your argument seems to be that the guardian's decision to terminate life support really stops a super intervening heroic effort by medical professions, and the act that actually terminates the life of the child is not the medical decision, it's the abuse that the child endured, and therefore that is not, in your position, a de facto termination of parental rights.
That is correct, Your Honor. At this point, the baby is being held in an unnatural limbo state by medical science, and the withdrawal of life support would allow his death to occur.
So your position is that the abuse is the natural termination of parental rights, if allowed to take its natural course?
Well, I'm not willing to say that the death of a child is the termination of parental rights.
Perhaps I rephrase that, but the fact that the parents will lose any ability to make decisions
yes.
on the child is a natural consequence of the abuse, not the medical intervention.
Yes, that is correct.
Counsel, before you sit down, I was initially impressed with Judge Carr's discussion in this case, and I've just been rereading that. If I understand what she's saying, if this child were an adult, 21-33-08 would be in play. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And if this child were an adult, life support could not yet be removed.
That is correct.
So we have a curious situation here where a child has less protection in the law than an adult.
I would disagree with the phrase less protection.
The end result, the life of the child, you argue could have been terminated if this court had not stepped in months ago. And that would not have been the case had this child been an adult.
However,
is that correct?
That's
what Judge Carr seems to be saying.
Life support could not have been terminated. However, probate court determined that in this situation, it would be in Aiden's best interest for life support to be terminated.
So the probate court, absent a specific statute, because you can turn this argument about the legislature could have stepped in, could look at it the other way and say the legislature intentionally did not want to allow the removal of life support or to set that up for a child.
Well, Your Honor, my argument would be that the fact that they allowed the appointment of guardians for medical decisions and did not exclude withdrawal of life support.
Would you dispute that this particular probate court has an aggressive view of its powers compared to most probate judges on this subject?
I don't know of other probate courts who have addressed this question, Your Honor.
Or have claimed the power of the probate judge through a guardian to terminate life for a child.
I don't know of any other courts that have had the issue presented to them.
Mr. Dickinson, the point is that the parents would have the right to make a determination to withdraw life support. You'd agree with that?
Absolutely.
In a normal circumstance?
Absolutely. It would not have to wait a year.
Now, we have a guardian who does not have the statutory authority, as you've answered with respect to Judge Pfeiffer's question, to withdraw life support because it's a child.
Does
which
not
is
have
different
the
from what might be the case for an adult.
Right.
And yet, if I understand your argument, the point is you don't see a necessity to go back and terminate parental rights before proceeding to have a guardian take action, which the statute does not authorize.
Well, my position is that the statute does authorize.
That's why I brought the question to you earlier. Isn't the predicate issue termination of parental rights to have someone in that capacity to act as the parents could act?
No, because the 21-1106 does not require the termination of parental rights.
All right.
Rights.
I understand your argument. Thank you.
Counsel, isn't the overriding language here?
Time for Mr. Kitzler here.
Overriding language here, I would suggest, is the best interest of the child, which becomes the paramount guide once the unsuitability of the parents is established. Then the best interest of the child and what that best interest is.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dickinson. Mr. Kitzler, we and Mr. Dickinson have used all the time, but I'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that, and I'd like to use that 2 minutes to address a couple of the questions brought up by the court, specifically the relationship between the juvenile court and the probate court in this matter. Introduce myself. I'm David Kitzler. I represent Richland County Children's Services Board, and I would emphasize that we are not the applicant in this matter. The applicant is Ellen Kafori, represented by Mr. Dickinson. We came to the probate court based on a ruling in the Richland County Juvenile Court that the juvenile court has no power to authorize medical treatment which would lead to the termination of life. And we went to the probate court somewhat reluctantly in this matter. The ethics committee from the hospital approached Richland County Children's Services, which was Aiden's custodian, with the recommendation that because of Aiden's severely damaged condition, that termination of life support was appropriate, and that because of the involvement or the potential involvement of both parents in the damage to Aiden, that the parents were not appropriate people to make that decision and hinged that authority on 06. The juvenile court, under its powers, only has the power to sustain life, and the juvenile court conceded that the appropriate forum to make a decision which might terminate life would be the probate court, if at all. Now, in the 4-day hearing that was held in Summit County, we heard compelling evidence as to 2 points. Number one, that Aiden had suffered a very serious, life-threatening injury that was caused by abuse. And I'm bothered by Mr. Markovich's characterization of this as an unrebuttable presumption. If the court were to read the medical evidence in this transcript, it is compelling. It is from three very eminently qualified physicians who state very clearly two things. Number one, that Aiden's injury was the result of an abusive act while he was in the sole care of his father. Number two, that he had a prior injury indicative of abuse that was probably a month or two old. And number three, that he was most surely going to die in a short time from these injuries. And in the meantime, his cerebral cortex had been destroyed to the point where he could not have a meaningful relationship with the world around him. He's not technically brain dead because of the fact that he still has a functioning brain stem, but that essentially life for Aiden in any meaningful way was over. The doctors told us on several occasions that it's not uncommon for parents to have to make this very tragic decision that their child's life will alternate at this point between nothingness and occasional discomfort coming from treatment, and that the proper decision in that situation is to turn off the machines, which are Aiden's only lifeline, and to allow him to expire naturally. Children's Services, having heard that testimony and finding it compelling, agrees at this point that the proper decision for Aiden is the turning off of the machines, the allowing him to die naturally. The trial judge's decision is based on several previous decisions. It's based on the statute, which has never been overruled. I would not at all mind seeing the legislature act to clarify this issue. But based on the status of the law in April of 2004, based on the cases, statutes in existence at that time, based on the evidence, the decision in this case is supported by clear and convincing evidence, and Children's Services submits that it's proper. And I will answer any questions the court
might have.
There
is no proceeding in juvenile court in Richland County, I assume. Is that right?
I can clarify that, Your Honor, and I meant to. I'm sorry. I'm feeling the pressure of time, so I'm going a little bit too fast. Aiden is currently in the temporary custody of Richland County Children's Services. That decision was made by agreement of all parties the day after evidence was concluded in the probate proceeding and about a week before that decision was announced. Aiden has been in the emergency shelter care of Richland County Children's Services since the day after his injuries. On April, I believe it was the 23rd, everyone agreed that Aiden was an abused child based on the fact that his injuries were not consistent with the history given for them. And I believe that's 2151-031C, if memory serves. And based on that, he was placed in the temporary custody of Children's Services. There is not presently a permanent custody complaint or motion pending. There is a reunification plan in process at the current time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Markovich, you've used your time, but you may take a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
The court's independent medical expert, Dr. Wisnitzer, used the expression that pictures don't lie, and I think that the pictures he was referring to were CT scans. As Mr. Kitzler has pointed out, the compelling evidence in this case includes photographs taken by the parents of a birth injury which undisputably resulted in a prior subdural hematoma. That leaves us with a situation in which we have a curious amount of circular reasoning, Your Honors, which begs for guidance from this court. We have an absence of statutory authority, which provides authority. We have an absence of evidence of abuse, which is presumed to be evidence of abuse. And on the basis of that, we have fundamentally no fair procedure available to my clients in the termination of the life of their only child. Your Honors, I believe that's an absence of reason, and we would ask that the court would carefully consider the issues involved.
Thank you, Mr. Markovich.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.